Hello, I'm Sarah James, a lifestyle blogger and self-help aficionado.
And I'm Kristen Howerton, a writer and psychotherapist.
And you are listening to Selfie, a weekly podcast in the Life Listen Network about two women embarking on a self-care bender.
We're both of the opinion that self-care is important, and yet it's elusive. And while we may have all the information we need, we don't always get there.
We want to explore different aspects of self-care, from the silly to the serious, looking at body, mind, and spirit, and also just some random topics thrown in there for good measure.
We also want to look at the defenses and distractions that keep us from caring for ourselves like we should. Hey guys, so today we are going to be talking further in our series on the Enneagram. We're going to be talking specifically about type 2. And then we are going to have a conversation about staying sane during the holidays.
Oh my goodness. I do want to also say, for those of you that are not interested in the Enneagram and are here all for the holiday self-care part, you can go ahead and skip to the 25-ish mark.
So the two personality type on the Enneagram, these are our helpers.
Helpers.
These people are caring. They are interpersonal. They are deeply invested in their relationship with other people. They're very generous. They're demonstrative, but they can also be a little bit possessive.
Ooh. So their most basic desire is to feel loved, and their most basic fear is of not being wanted or unworthy, or, you know, being unworthy of love.
Yes. So, people who are twos tend to really want to feel needed. They will. They're very helpful. They are extremely, you know, hopping up. What do you need? Can I get you a drink? They want to be loved, and they're looking for love by performing.
Okay. This is not really me.
It's really not me either. And it's funny because when I, you know, when I read the description of the two, I thought like, oh, that's the good one.
Yo, me too. I'm like, wow, like, they're so selfless.
They're servants. Yeah.
God.
But I will say I have some very close friendships with twos, and it can go a little bit awry because twos can be very demanding. They are very generous, but then they expect it back.
Okay.
And sometimes this helpfulness can actually be self-serving. In other words, they're helping for the praise. Twos in their unhealthy spot don't necessarily help in behind the scenes ways.
Right. Right.
They really want to be seen and loved and noticed. And they can even do a little flag waving about their helpfulness.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can be jealous and possessive. They can be needy and controlling.
Okay. So yeah, I briefly looked this over, and it seemed like, you know, we talked about these past couple of weeks about being your healthiest type and the unhealthiest type. So
right.
It seems like the healthiest levels of being a two are empathetic, compassionate, feeling for others, sincere, warm-hearted, you know, a truly loving person, and like feeling that it's their privilege to help other people. But then,
yeah, and a two who's working their crap is going to be working towards being unselfish in ways that no one sees, right?
Oh,
so they're
yeah.
going to be working towards not being performatively generous, but generous to the core.
Okay. Because as you look down into the unhealthy levels, yeah, they could be domineering, coercive, feeling entitled to get anything they want from others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, so I love how these have all the levels of healthiness, because I think that it's so truthful, and you can always see yourself in a little bit of this. But also level 9, people that are getting into this, like when you get down into the very, very bottom, like the unhealthiest level, they're kind of frightening.
You're right.
It's like I don't want to even read this.
Well, right. And you know, when a two gets down to that unhealthy level, they can just breed on resentment.
Yes.
They can be angry and bitter. They can totally play victim. You know,
yes.
Like, well, I'm always helping and no one ever helps me back, and, you know, kind of martyr themselves for other people.
Exactly.
You know, and we've all known those people, and those people can be exhausting.
Oh, yeah. And this was interesting that I noticed it said like somatization of their aggressions results in chronic health problems, but they vindicate themselves as the reason they're falling apart is because of others.
Right.
So it actually almost burdens others. I thought that was interesting. I'd never read something like that before about, you know, actually having health problems because of this, and they vindicate themselves, you know, by quote unquote falling apart.
Right. You know? And two, sometimes have a hard time identifying their own feelings because they're so worried about, you know, caretaking for other people. So then they don't pay attention to their own wants and needs. They have a hard time articulating it. And when a two is in a relationship with anyone else who isn't a two, they have these kind of unexpressed desires and needs. Again, they're expecting the world to treat them like they're like everyone's a two, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're in a relationship with a two, oftentimes you don't realize the things they expect of you.
Oh.
And then they're resentful of you, but they haven't verbalized it. So it's really important for twos to understand how to verbalize what they need and to lower their expectations of others.
Okay.
Because not everyone's a two. And then it's important for people in a relationship with a two to try to do some of that connecting, you know, leaving notes, being generous, gift giving, all of that kind of generous behavior that may not be intuitive to your type.
Right.
Right. You know?
Right, right. And then also it seems that they can really have, like I said earlier, physical burnout. And so it's important for them to really care for their body and the spirit, you know,
absolutely.
Because I can imagine living like that could be very exhausting.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting. There are certain types that struggle with self-care more than others. Nines actually are amazing at self-care because they're all about comfort. So they can check out of life and, like, you know, they're fine going to the spa for an entire day. Threes, like, which we'll talk about next week, which we both are, we struggle with it because we're always trying to figure out what needs to be done. Twos struggle with self-care because they're caring for everyone but themselves.
Oh, that's such a good point.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's time we talk to a two. What about you?
Let's do it.
But first, I want to talk about a great gift for the holidays. And it's actually one of our sponsors today who are offering such a good deal for our listeners. CanvasPeople.com is a resource online for creating really unique gifts. I've always been a fan of giving photos to my grandparents, to aunts and uncles. It's just like they love it, right?
Yes. In fact, I am giving photo gifts even to my nephew because I know that he is really bad at printing photos. So for those of you that don't know, canvaspeople.com has a really easy service where they take your photos, put them on canvases, let you put your memories into really beautiful artwork that you can hang in your home. So instead of taking those photos and letting them sit on your phone, you can bring them to life and put them on your walls, in your house, in your office, or as a really great personalized Christmas gift.
Yeah, it's awesome. And the canvases are made here in the USA. So they actually contribute to 250 manufacturing jobs here in America, which is great. The canvases can be ordered wrapped or within a frame, but the deal they've got for our listeners right now, normally 11 by 14 canvases are priced at $69.99, but for a limited time, they are giving one free 11 by 14 canvas, and all you have to do is pay shipping. So to get this amazing deal, go to canvaspeople.com and put in the promo code SELFIE in the cart at checkout. It's canvaspeople.com, promo code SELFIE. Okay, so today we are speaking with Megan Francis, who is the co-host of the Mom Hour podcast. She and her co-host Sarah Powers have 8 kids between them, ranging from preschool to teens, so they know a lot about motherhood. She also knows a lot about being a two. So thanks so much for joining us today, Megan. We are obviously diving into this whole Enneagram business.
Yes, I am a huge Enneagram fanatic. And I really just found out about it kind of randomly a few years ago, which was weird because I love personality tests. I'm a little self-absorbed, I think. I don't know. maybe the word is self-aware. Maybe
yes,
that's what it is.
Self-aware is so much better, Megan.
Yes, it really, really is. But I had never heard of the Enneagram, and I don't remember how I found it, but I took it and was floored. So
like, how long ago was this?
Probably 3 years is my
guess. Okay. And so from the beginning, you've been really into it?
Since that, yeah, when I took the test and I, you know, I had done Myers-Briggs and I'd done like StrengthsFinder and a DISC assessment and all those different kind of personality tests. And I, you know, I usually would find something I could kind of agree with. And then,
right.
Sometimes you're like, well, I don't know, does this fit? This totally fits. I did all the color tests. On
Facebook. Yeah. Oh yeah. I did all of those too.
But none of them struck, really hit home as much as the Enneagram did. And I think it's because of the focus on your, like, your real wants, like what motivates you,
yes,
rather than the way you present to the world, which I feel like Myers-Briggs is very much the way I exist in the world. But Enneagram is like, what makes me tick? And that
exactly.
was kind of hard.
Yeah. Well, it is. And I feel like that's kind of how I was, because I took the test. I had the email sent to me and I read about it. And I think some of it kind of was like, wait, what? And, you know, you got kind of, well, that's right. And I don't even know if I don't even know how deep
me.
I want to go into this right now,
know.
You know? So tell, what's your type?
So I'm a two. That is the helper. I don't know if every place that does the Enneagram labels them the same, but the one that I went to, I think it was the Enneagram Institute.
Okay.
They label it the helper. So I thought I would be a seven, which seven is the person who has a million things going on and dives into activities and seems like very active and energetic. And I just, something about that felt very flattering to me.
Yeah.
I've always been someone who does a lot of different things, and I always have my fingers in a bunch of pies, and it just seemed to fit. And when I got my results back as a two, I was like, nope, I took the test again. And then I took it a third time and it came back two every time.
So you were kind of like a little disappointed.
I didn't want to be a two, especially because I read the description of what a two is. And the version that I used, the descriptions are laid out like healthiest to least healthy. And the version, like the least healthy version of a two is terrible. It's like a terrible person, right? But they're all terrible people. The least healthy version of every type is terrible. But when you recognize yourself a little more in that terribleness, it feels so much worse. So,
oh, it totally does.
Yeah. So a two is motivated by wanting to feel loved and needed. That's
okay.
Really like their base motivator. So that can be great because you can, like, if you're like at the height of healthiness as a two, you're nurturing, you're loving, people love being around you, you're warm and sincere and all that stuff.
Right.
But if you're like a nine, you are a martyr and you, I mean, like, Munchausen's by proxy and all this crazy stuff. And so it's like, oh, I read that and thought, is this, and it felt like it hit a little too close to home. So is that the experience you had with being a three?
Well, kind of. I'm a three with a four wing, I believe. And
yes.
A three at its worst is like a sociopathic murderer.
So, right. Not
so
good.
I'm like, no, I mean, that made me feel a little bit concerned, but yeah, I mean, I think you're right in that, like, at every number at their worst, every type at their worst is like the worst of the worst. But
right.
But I could see myself like moving down through that scale.
Yes.
Oh, I could definitely see myself in that.
And I could also identify times of my life where I've been sort of, you know, now I think I'm in the top third, you know.
Right.
But
right.
Definitely there's been times in my life where I've been in that second, third.
Me too. Yes.
I've been very needy and kind of, you know, a little bit martyry and has unreasonable expectations of people. I can be very codependent. I mean, there's like a lot of things I really, really recognize about myself. And
right.
That was hard.
Yeah. So the dark side of your type is kind of the whole martyr.
Right.
Thing.
Yes.
Just
yes.
Okay. And
kind of a sociopath as well, like a sociopathic martyr.
I think all of them are sociopaths.
Exactly.
I'm guessing if it's like the worst you could possibly be.
Exactly. Exactly.
But did you really see those hallmarks of, you know, being loved and feeling needed and expressing that within yourself too? Right.
Absolutely. And then since I, you know, really sat with that for a while and became kind of okay with it, I actually wrote a whole blog post about it.
Yeah.
Like how I sort of became okay with that knowledge.
Yeah.
It's really helped me. It's actually helped me a lot in my interpersonal relationships, like kind of as a gut check for like when
right.
I'm making a decision, why am I doing that? Is it because there's this little wounded child inside of me person?
Right.
Like that's my lizard brain self or whatever. I
right.
found it very helpful. And another thing I think is really interesting. A few years ago, I Sarah Powers at the Mom Hour and I hosted a retreat. And we had everybody at the retreat take the Enneagram. And I thought it was fascinating how types are drawn to types.
Mm-hmm.
So I've made almost everybody in my life that I'm close to take the Enneagram. And almost without fail, almost without fail. Of course, there are exceptions, but the people that I'm closest to are ones, twos, and nines.
Really?
So the one is the idealist. That's Sarah. That's also my best friend, Jenna.
Okay.
Totally fits them both to a T. And it's interesting that I would have this sort of working relationship bestie who would line up so closely with my real life, you know, day-to-day bestie. And then I've also, and then nine is the peacemaker. So there's like the idealist and the peacemaker, and lots of people in my life are a peacemaker. Lots of people in my life are twos, are helpers. My sister, who is one of my closest friends. And just, it's really, really interesting. That also held true to the other people at the retreat who were taking it. And then some of them came with friends and they were having their friends take it. And Sarah's best friend is a two. And it was just fascinating. So I think that there's probably a lot of that too.
Yeah.
That certain kinds of people are drawn to like. Whatever it is that balances that out.
Well, that's really, see, I haven't gone that far yet. But now I'm just spinning about this because it's funny, you know, Kristen and I are the same. We're both threes.
Right.
She's a three with a two wing. I'm a three with a four wing.
Interesting.
Yes. Which I was like, well, thank God. Because when we did the Myers-Briggs, I'm like, I'm an ISFJ and she's an INFJ. I'm like, could we possibly.
Just that little difference. It's like you guys are just like one notch, you know, in the other direction.
Yes.
So fascinating. Okay.
But I would love to look into this, like my best friends, see what number they are, or just people that I've dated or my husband and how that all fits together. Now, have you like really gotten into books and things as well?
I haven't. Read a lot online, but I have not gotten into the books. One thing I wish someone would do, and I think this is like ripe for happening, is to figure out how your Enneagram corresponds with your Myers-Briggs. So I am an ENFP.
Uh-huh.
So I am an extrovert, and I have to, but there's so much about the ENFP that has nothing to do with the Enneagram, with the Myers-Briggs. It has, you know, they're just like we said before, they're very different in the way, what they measure.
Right.
So I'd be really curious to see if there are ways like to match those things up and make some predictions or something.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Like, how does a two ENFP present to the world differently or feel things differently than, say, a three ENFP or whatever? So does a three ENFP even exist? I don't know.
So did you get really into the wings at all?
So I have a three wing.
Okay.
So that made a certain amount of sense when I read the description. And I think the three, I want to say it's more like the entertainer. Or
it's
not
the achiever.
The achiever. So the three is the achiever, but the two with the three wing, I believe, is like the hostess or something.
I think that's right.
Is that right? Okay.
I think so.
I can't believe I remember that. Okay. I think what that means is I not only, you know, I want people to feel comfortable around me and all that. And so I want to like open my home to them and also in an achieving kind of a way. Like I want to show them that I can do all these things for them. And I think it would be very different if I was a two with a one wing. So,
with a two, you're saying like the most important thing to you is to feel needed and feel loved. But is that also for a two, the most important thing is to make others feel needed and loved or
no? Well, here's the thing. In your best self, if you're healthy, yes.
Okay. Okay.
If you're not, it kind of all becomes about getting other people to validate you, really. So yes, like I do feel a lot of validation when other people feel loved in my presence and needed and blah, blah, blah. And if I'm really healthy, I can be kind of altruistic about it. And I can recognize like that it's a win-win.
Right.
But if I was like tipping toward unhealthy, I would really just want it all for myself. I might even seem still like I cared about what they think or what, but really all I would really want is for them to need me. So it's like this weird, like opposite sides of the same coin almost, or this weird spectrum where it can be either. I'm always trying to push myself toward that place where like I genuinely have other people's best interests at heart, not just wanting everyone else to think I have everyone's best interests at heart so that I can look good. And it's a dangerous thing.
That's a three thing too.
Ooh, and saying that's so cringy.
Oh, like, it is. Ugh. It's so cringy.
I hate myself right now.
It's okay. We're in the upper third quadrant right now, Megan. We're healthy. We're doing it right. We're not going to slip down. So. Right. What do you wish other people understood about being a two?
Well, that is really interesting. I think people can underestimate a two's need to talk things through, to check in. I need to check in with people in my life a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to put an immense amount of energy into my relationships.
Okay.
But if I don't start to feel like I'm getting that back, then that quickly becomes a problem for me. So there has to be that balance. Now, I have lots of friendships that are more surface. And I think that what's really interesting about me as an ENFP and a two at the same time is I have very few inner circle friends. Like, mm-hmm. I really keep that pretty limited because I really couldn't have a ton of inner circle friends. I would burn out because I put so much into it. So I'm pretty good at figuring out like the line for myself. Who's a right. friend, who's a friendly, who's yes. a bestie, you know, like there's all those different layers. And I'm pretty good at maintaining those boundaries for myself. But like those people that I have sort of chosen to be the specialist, the most specialist people in my life, like I kind of need them to know that that's their role so that they can just, I don't know, like engage and give back and all those things. And so sometimes that can become a touchy, and it's not because I'm just like, I don't know. I don't have like low self-esteem. I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, super, I don't think of myself as super needy, but I think I could maybe come off that way. So that to the right so people, and to a lot of other people would probably never see me that way. It is very interesting actually.
But from doing all of this,
yeah,
you feel comfortable with, you know, putting forth that information to your friends, like letting them know. Do you use that? I mean, in your conversations, like directly kind of say, this is something because, that I need or.
Yes. Well, because I've made everyone take the Enneagram.
That's right.
That's what
now that I
do.
Know that you now we cannot be friends until you take this test.
So it's actually been fascinating. I've like ever seriously, if I ever have a gathering, everyone ends up taking the Enneagram. And then I think it's a really great opportunity for everyone to talk about their type, how their types interact. And they have that, you know, you can see how different types interact somewhere. I don't know which site you're using or book or whatever, but like a lot of them will do that. Like, will pair people up and see what the sticking points might be and how it can work. And then I just think that that's like a really, I found it to be very like a bonding thing with my friends.
Yeah.
And say like, this is what motivates me. And
yeah,
and I can be more open too. And, you know, some of this is also age. Like, I feel like, and I don't know about you guys, and this is a different topic for a different day probably, but the older I get, the more okay I am with being really sappy and telling my friends yeah. things like, I really like it when you,
yeah.
you know, rub my back when I'm standing next to you or whatever. I'm really good at that now. And I used to be terrible at it.
Oh, so, see, that's know, amazing.
With all this stuff, with all this self, what did I say? Self-obsession? No, wait.
Self-aware.
Right? It's all a good thing. It's like we're all getting older and we're all learning who we are. And
well, affirmations are always yeah. good.
Exactly.
You know,
because
exactly. it like just puts that other person, it just makes them feel better. And then they yeah. open up a little bit. It's like a little flower and they open up
right.
a little bit too. But it is hard. It's super vulnerable to do that. It is. To
it
like
is.
Even affirm others is vulnerable for me. Because you just, you know, you don't know what the reaction is going to be. And, oh,
right.
did I take
well,
it too
far?
Well,
and what about a three? Like what hangups do you think with a three would you see in, say, telling someone, this is who I am and I want you to understand me better?
Well, I mean, just in general.
Just that,
I mean, you know,
that at all.
Achievers yeah. are very concerned about their image. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's very important to be the best at what they do and, you know, turn in all of their homework on time as teenagers and do really well at the job and always stand out. And when we aren't doing our very best, we feel like we aren't doing our very best. It is like a total downer. We can completely beat ourselves up. And it's very important that we just look like we have it all together at all times.
So you might struggle with showing
oh,
a less
yeah.
flattering side of yourself.
Oh, yeah. absolutely. Because I just feel like, oh, that's where it gets me with like the worthiness. I'm like, well, if I'm not doing my best and people don't think I'm doing my best, then I'm worthless. Like that's me at my, and like, that's my middle so, quadrant where I get very
that's your
like,
middle quadrant.
Yeah. Where I'm
and
just like,
me,
I'm worthless.
I guess it would be if no one's depending on me right now. What,
right.
What am I? Like, what value do I have? And so, right. That's like so interesting. No wonder I end up with 5 kids.
I know.
I've got an endless supply of people who need me.
So you have teens. So have they taken the test?
I have had a couple of them take the test, and their reaction to taking the test, any personality test, is actually interesting. So my son Jacob, who's actually just turned 20, he took a Myers-Briggs and thought it was all just a bunch of hocus pocus.
Right.
Thought it was junk. But then I can't remember what his part was or his type was, but it was totally the one who thinks that anyway. Like it was like his reaction to taking the test was perfectly demonstrated in the test results. Like,
yeah.
it was awesome. I don't know that I had him do the Enneagram. The Enneagram,
yeah.
I feel like it's just a little more self-aware.
Yes.
It's a grown-up test.
I agree.
Like, you know,
I agree.
Just the way you answer it. I think you can't really answer the questions accurately till you know yourself pretty well. So
I would agree with that. Though. So, okay. So finally, let's say someone's just getting into the Enneagram right now. They've just taken the test and they just found out they're a two. So what advice would you give to others about learning that? Like, what is it like to be, what's the best advice to give to a two?
Oh, I think for myself, like I have to be okay. I had to get really okay with the idea that no one is 100% altruistic for only altruistic reasons. There's always another reason for it. So if you seem like you're this earth mother type and you just want to go around spreading love and kisses everywhere and there's nothing in it for you ever, that's just not the way human beings work.
Yeah.
And I had to kind of become okay with that. Like I really had to look around and say, everybody does things because it makes them feel good. That's what being human is all about. And
yeah,
it happens to make me feel good to make other people feel good. And if I look back at childhood memories, like some of my very earliest memories were things like sitting in a movie theater, looking around to make sure other people were having a good time.
Because
if they weren't having a good time, I couldn't have a good time and stuff like that. And that can be a sickness or it can be a great thing. And
that's true.
It's all my power to decide how I'm going to live who I am in the world. So I guess just get okay with it. None of these types, it's neutral. It's not a judgment.
Right.
And it's all just a neutral thing about yourself that you can use for good or for not so good.
Oh, that's awesome. I know so much more about twos now. Thank you, Megan.
You're so like, I hope it made you feel really good.
You made me feel so good. I feel so loved and needed and seen and right now.
And you know what, Sarah? You are such an awesome achiever. I recognize that about you.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, let's shift and let's talk about self-care during the holiday season, because I do think this is a thing that many of us find really elusive.
I'm trying to be optimistic and positive here, but part of me is just like rolling. I'm rolling my eyes right now. You cannot see me, but my eyes are rolling to the back of my head because it's like, how do you even do this?
Right? Like the holidays, it's just a cluster. Like everything falls apart. Everything's crazy.
I always tell myself everybody else is going through this too, because think about it. Okay. You're socializing more, you're spending more money, you're doing more, you're eating more.
Yes.
You're sleeping less.
Yes.
So I mean, to think that you could even be in a decent mindset all the way through the holidays, I think that's the number one problem, right? Like we just have to be a little bit more graceful, like give ourselves a little bit of grace here.
Well, and I not to always continue to go back to the Enneagram, people are going to be like, enough ladies, but I do think that there are certain personality types that struggle more with the holidays. And I think I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. I know you are too.
Yes.
And like you said, the holidays is a lot of FaceTime with people.
Oh my gosh. So much talking.
It can be super taxing. And then, you know, I'm a three, you're a three. So we're interested in our image.
Oh yeah.
And I will admit, I mean, this is super unflattering and embarrassing for myself, but I get into my holiday image. And let me explain that. Like I want my home to look perfectly holidayed out.
Mm-hmm.
I spend a lot of time and energy on sending out a beautifully curated Christmas card, which means we're getting family photos taken.
Oh yeah. Oh God.
And then I'm editing them and I'm, you know,
yeah.
I'm super into gift giving and I spend a ridiculous amount of time and energy choosing the right gifts and wrapping them nicely, you know, redecorating my house, hosting parties, choosing the right outfits for the parties. A lot of this for myself is completely like self-propelled.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I could get away from myself, I'd be fine.
It sounds very three-ish, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does. But you know what's so interesting? Because I'm a three too, and I don't know what it is, but I don't seem to care that much. And I do care a lot in other facets of my life. But something about the holidays, I mean, if we get a tree up 2 weeks before, that's good. You know, Dustin's like, do you want to decorate the house? Oh, fine. You know, I'm not really thinking about gifts. That I mean, everything seems to be a last minute procrastination thing for me. And I can't quite put my finger on why that happens. Well, I'm an excellent procrastinator. I only really work under pressure. I've discovered this at a very young age. But I haven't gotten so wrapped up in the whole image of the holidays. And I don't, which I just think that would be exhausting because I'm already exhausted as it is dealing with talking to as many people as I have to talk to in November and December and all the stories. Now, I will say I do get wrapped up in being at parties and being the storyteller and, you know, bringing people together and that high energy. And I am so burned out by the time I get home at night. I almost want to cry. Literally, I really, I'm just like, it's too much for an introvert, but you and I are both the same in that, you know, we're extroverted introverts. We can definitely turn it on. And that's the three, too. That's the three in us. You know, we turn it on.
I'm a very social introvert. So I start Thanksgiving weekend. I host a party every year. I've done it for the last 15 years for all my neighbors and a good portion of my friends. I do a big Friendsgiving potluck and I try to have my tree up before that because I like the holiday vibe.
Yeah.
So that's the beginning of just a whole bunch of insanity. I feel like the minute that starts and then I host another party, like a Buddy the Elf party where we have spaghetti with candy on top.
Oh so my God. That's so cute.
I really like hosting. I like going. And I also procrastinate. So, you know, I have also been known to, you know, on Christmas Eve be like up the entire night wrapping gifts. So my attempt at self-care this year is doing things super early. So literally today, and we're recording this before Thanksgiving, I have all of my gifts out, like spread out in the living room, and I'm sorting and wrapping them.
You have your Christmas, your holiday gifts?
The Christmas gifts I'm giving everyone.
You've already bought those?
I have.
Oh my gosh.
Pretty much just about all of them.
You're amazing.
Again, just because I know how I get in the holidays and I'm trying to be more sane.
That is such a good approach to self-care. It is because you're like not allowing yourself to get to that place where you're going to be frazzled and doing so many things at once on top of all the other things we're dealing with.
We shall see. We shall see.
That's true. My attempt at self-care this season is going to remember, this is so basic, it's almost embarrassing, right? But I'm going to actually go outside and walk because something happens to me in the holidays where I stop exercising because I just feel like I have too many other things to do. And so I do not. And there is something, this is just, it's so cheesy, but there is just something about fresh air. There's something about walking outside in the fresh air, looking around. It's like, okay, I'm this little person on this very large planet and it's all going to be okay. And I'm making myself do that, which is really hard. Trust me, I can come up with 1,000 reasons as to why I should not go outside and walk. I could do all sorts of other things, but I need to do that for sure. And then someone recently was telling me about, have you heard of Loveless? Do you journal at all, Kristen?
No, I haven't in a long time.
Okay, so I've been an on and off journaler my whole life, but sometimes, you know, this whole influx of gratitude journals that's like come on over the past 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I'm kind of rolling my eyes. I know. I'm sorry. I just kind of like, I wish I could do that. But sometimes I feel like I'm being super cheesy. Probably why I'm in a bad mood all the time. Maybe I really should actually do that. I don't know.
Maybe you should.
Okay, fine. This is close though. So this is called a love list. And I don't know why this seems so different to me. But it's basically if you have a journal, you just sit down and write things that you love. Which I guess is kind of things that you're grateful for as well, but things that you love, things that you would love to do, things that you daydream about loving. And so it's just, it puts you in the best mood. And then, you know, just the fact of sitting down and tactile, like writing on a piece of paper is really, really good for you when you're stressed out because it just like works a part of your brain that you're not working these days with screens and all the craziness.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to write a couple love lists over this holiday.
That's really smart. That's really smart. And I think getting outside is really smart in the holidays too. Another thing I think that kind of falls apart in the holidays is we all eat like crap.
Oh, I know.
And you know, that does have an effect.
Oh yeah, it totally does.
I mean, there's cookies around all the, it's absurd sometimes.
Oh yeah.
The amount of sweets that come even into my house at the holidays, neighbors bringing cookies, you know, kids bringing stuff home from school. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, and I guess the only thing I try to do during that is just really, I'm pretty strict about my weekdays. I feel like that's where I can find my balance during the holiday, is that weekdays, I just think of it as any other Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, all the rest of the year. I don't really partake in that unless there's a party or something that I'm going to that evening. But even cookies and things, I really try to just keep them. Usually I get rid of that stuff, to be honest with you, because I will eat it, or I let my kids have it once in a while. But usually I'll just be like, thank you so much, have one, and throw it away, because otherwise I will totally eat it. But then I also allow myself on the weekends to just kind of do whatever I want. So, you know,
smart. And I've given myself a rule before of like, you can eat whatever you want at a holiday party.
Yeah.
But not at home.
Yes.
Like, it's not a free for all at home. I mean, which is really what you're saying too.
Exactly. Which for me means not even having it in my home, because if it's in my home, I'm shoving it in my face. So no.
Another thing I'm trying to do in kind of anticipation of the holiday season, because I can get really caught up in cleaning, because I have a personality type that I feel like I can't relax until everything is clean. Like I need, my relaxing is conditional, which is absurd, you know, and I need to work on that as well. But, you know, it's kind of, there's a lot of me like setting the path for relaxation. Like, you know, and so I am attempting to really purge my house before the holiday season kind of goes into full swing, because when I purge, it's just way cleaner, way easier to keep it clean.
Yes.
You know, then I don't get into the like piles of, and that's another reason I'm trying to get my Christmas gifts out, because I'm trying to mail them. I'm trying to clear my house out of anything. I don't even want these gifts laying around. I'm going to mail them next week, like, and just get everything out of my house.
Kristen, which that I'm sounds hoping good.
Will keep, you know, keep me more sane if I don't have piles. But I do want to, I'm going to link this up on selfiepodcast.com. If you guys have not seen, there is a YouTube video by Chris Fleming called Company is Coming, and he's dressed as a woman. Have you seen this?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes, I have seen this.
He's frantically cleaning the house because company's coming. And every time I watch it, I think like, that is really me. I've been that person.
Oh, I've been that person.
I have screamed at my children because people are coming over, to the point where my kids, when we're having an event, are like, no, because they know I'm going to be psycho.
Oh, we will definitely link up to that, because that is absolutely hilarious. And I think almost everyone can find a little bit of themselves in that guy slash girl.
Gail. Gail's the character.
Gail. I love Gail.
The Gail in me sees the Gail in you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so what's up next week?
Well, next week we are going to be talking about threes, which Sarah and I both are. So we're going to be looking at the Enneagram 3 and what our internal drives and motivations are.
And we are also going to be talking about New Year's resolutions, whether or not we do them personally, and whether or not they're even a good idea in the first place. So we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for joining us. Continue the selfie conversation with us on Instagram at Selfie Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/selfiepodcast.
You can also visit our website to check out the resources we've talked about in each episode at selfiepodcast.com. Make sure to subscribe to Selfie on iTunes so that you can catch up with us next week.
A huge thanks to Shepherd Audio for our intro music. Take care.